Hey everybody, and welcome back to Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, etc., and this week we watched Hobbs and Shaw. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel.
Hey, it's John.
So Sam, I know you'd seen this before. Mm-hmm. John, had you seen this before?
I have not.
So you were in my boat here. Okay.
Yeah.
So Sam, tell us about your sort of first impressions of it.
So I went to go see this in theaters with Andrew. I thought I had gone with you, but I guess it was Andrew.
It had to have been, because I don't remember seeing it. Seeing this.
And, you know, I'm not a Fast and Furious fan.
Me neither. At all.
But this movie is so entertaining. It's so stupid, but it's also, it plays into the stupidity of it. Like, very clearly, they are fine with making it a comedy.
Yeah.
It's Dwayne Johnson. He's not trying to act as Luke Hobbs anymore. He's just being himself.
He's just Dwayne Johnson.
And it is very, very entertaining. Is it a good movie? Probably not. Some of the fight scenes are really well choreographed. You know, would I say it's a good movie? Probably not. But it is highly entertaining.
John?
Pretty similar analysis from me as well. Movie-wise and on a plot level, not that great of a film. However, not surprising, but the comedy and the fight sequences do a lot to save this film.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
And where, granted, it fails to kind of, you know, there's a lesson in there and there's a plot, but it's not well done. But however,
the third act twist.
So just so you know, me and Sam might be referencing a podcast I listen to a lot. It's fantastic. If you like this one, it's a better podcast than this, obviously.
Oi.
And it's well, it is though. But it's by like famous comedians. They're amazing. They watch bad movies, and they love the Fast and the Furious series. If you know who Jason Mantzoukas, Paul Scheer, or June Diane Raphael are, they are the hosts of it. But they did an episode on this movie that I may be referencing jokes from a lot, or like things that they pointed out, and like Sam will do the same because he's heard it.
So that's what I just said, is the third act twist in this movie is that they realize they have to work as a team.
And that's the third act twist. And so if we throw out things that you're like, wait, I've heard that before, it might be because you listened to that podcast. But either way, I recommend listening to that episode. That podcast is absolutely hilarious. And I will be stealing some of their stuff to say on here. But shout out to them. We're not threatening them. Whatever. This one, I'd really only heard about it from Samuel and from that podcast where they had been like, you know, going all over Fast and the Furious and everything. Because they review just about every Fast and the Furious, I can't say it.
Fast and the Furious
movie that comes out. And even like the trailers, they'll do like live watches of it and just break down like every moment of it. But yeah, it's a fantastic episode. You should go and watch it. It's called How Did This Get Made? And it's great. But I'll be referencing it a bunch. But yeah, I'd only heard of it on there, so I had some context, but obviously not a ton because I hadn't seen it. And then I'd heard about it from Sam. I'd heard about it from a bunch of people saying either it was terrible or it was great. Yeah, that's pretty much all I had going into this. So this one came out in 2019. It was directed by David Leitch. I don't know if it's Leitch or Leitch or what it is. Written by Chris Morgan and Drew Pierce, and stars Dwayne Johnson as Hobbs and Jason Statham as Shaw. I'll be honest, throughout this entire thing, I did not know which one was Hobbs and which one was Shaw for any of the movie. I just knew one of them was one of them because I don't watch Fast and the Furious. So I was like, I don't know who's who.
I was going to say, you wouldn't really, literally the only thing Fast and Furious does is establish who's who and a minor joke that happens at the beginning of the film, and that's it.
Wait,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, like the only context you would need from the other Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I for sure didn't know, like, until I was filling out all this information into my little document here, And I saw Dwayne Johnson as Hobbs. I was like, okay, so he's Hobbs. Great. And like put him in there. But until that moment, I did not know which one was Hobbs. But hopefully I'll try to remember now. But you can buy or rent this on YouTube, Google Play, Apple TV, Prime Video, or Vudu. And the IMDb summary for this says, lawman Luke Hobbs, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and outcast Deckard Shaw, aka Jason Statham, form an unlikely alliance when a cyber genetically enhanced villain threatens the future of humanity.
Played by the ever amazing Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah. He was great.
He was one of the best parts of this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent.
And now to Samuel.
So our director, David Leitch, hasn't done a ton of stuff, but the stuff he's done have all been pretty big stuff. So he did the first John Wick. He actually,
that makes sense.
It was weird. He directed it, but he was uncredited for directing it.
Why?
I don't know. There must have been some sort of legal stuff with it. It was his directorial debut, but somebody else got the credit, even though he directed it.
What are you talking about? Somebody else got the directorial credit.
That's what it said. It said that he was the uncredited director.
What year was this?
This was a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago? Well, I'm talking about that movie.
John Wick?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only a couple of years ago. John Wick is a new franchise.
Oh, I thought it had been around for a while.
No. John Wick is not an old franchise.
Okay.
It's fairly new, like mid
2014.
Yeah, it was like...
What the hell? Why did he not get credited? I'm so confused by that.
He directed the film with the assistance of Chad Stahelski, who they owned a company together because they were stunt coordinators.
Okay.
Who owned a stunt company together. They co-directed the film, but Leitch did not get credited.
What?
I don't know why.
I don't understand that, and I would be so angry if I did not get credited.
But he moved on to direct other films, such as Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron, I believe.
Yeah, there was a bunch of stuff about that in the fun facts.
And Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
Hey!
Both of those were all over the trivia for this.
I did see Deadpool 2. I had to think about that for a second.
Yeah. I've only seen the first one.
So then our writers... So Chris Morgan... who is one of the writers, he's basically just on Fast and Furious. He wrote Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, Fast 5, Fast and Furious 6, Furious 7, and The Fate of the Furious. I love their naming system.
I know, it's amazing.
And then Drew Pierce, the other writer, hasn't done much, but he did write Iron Man 3, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, and a movie called Hotel Artemis.
Okay.
I heard Hotel
Interesting.
Artemis.
So that's what he's done.
Cool. So, you know, so, like, really the biggest thing they've done is Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
By
Except
far.
For the director who did Deadpool 2. Deadpool yeah, 2 is okay. bigger than Fast. Well, I don't know. It's right there with Fast
It's
and
right
Furious.
There, yeah. Right. I will say, this movie is not titled Hobbs and Shaw.
No, it's Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is odd, but okay.
I mean, it makes sense because it plays, like, just... A spin-off adventure with Hobbs and Shaw.
I mean, it is a spin-off movie.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's just funny that they felt the need to do that because, like, Disney didn't do, Lion King. And then Disney presents Lion King 1.5 or, like, you know, anything like that. Or like, little spin-offs I feel like have been done before where they just, like, wrote in the Wikipedia or in the IMDb. This is within this universe, you know?
It's a power play.
Same thing with, like, The Curse of La Llorona. It's in the Conjuring series, but it doesn't say, The Conjuring presents The Curse of La Llorona. It doesn't say that. I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting choice, and I've been very confused as to if I was looking at the right thing every time I've seen it. I've been like, this looks
maybe
like a short. It looks like that would be called a short. Like, Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. It's like a little 5-minute short, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, any preliminary thoughts before we dive into this summary here?
The plot makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
At all.
The plot.
But you know what? It doesn't need to.
Like I said, the reason why this movie is so successful and is whatever success this movie has is purely on the fact that this thing rode the comedy and spectacle train all the way home.
So yes. I don't know what the actual scores are, but I do know that this movie shockingly did really well with critics because critics realized what it was supposed to be. Because that's like, Fast and Furious movies typically don't do well with critics
because they take themselves seriously. But this movie did not.
And this movie so obviously did not. No. The critics were like, okay, we can get behind this now. Because
this is a comedy.
Because this is, yeah, this is them almost making fun of Fast and Furious.
Yes.
All the crazy car stuff feels like it's making fun of Fast and Furious.
I told Sam, I was like, this is just Hot Wheels World Race again. Yeah. Like, yeah. I know I said it in Mad Max Fury Road, but like, it really is just like Hot Wheels. That's all it is.
It's so ridiculous. But my favorite thing about it is that it, you know, in the Fast and Furious movies, the ones that I've seen with Dwayne Johnson in them, he is really trying hard to act as Luke Hobbs. He's not being The Rock. He's trying to be a character. And he just threw all that aside for this movie. He's The Rock. And it works fine.
Are you kidding me with that opening sequence of the man literally drinking egg yolks?
So, also, I saw something that it was an article, which I hadn't seen because it was just from a couple days ago, that was Vin Diesel talking about their whole thing.
Like their whole beef?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
And apparently, and this actually makes sense with what I was just saying, and that's why I'm saying now it connects. Vin Diesel said that they're on pretty good terms now.
Okay.
But he said that a big part of why he thought there was so much tension was because Vin Diesel is basically almost the showrunner for the Fast and Furious franchise.
I'm not surprised.
Not only is he the main actor, like, he produces all the movies. Like, I want to say he owns the production company. Like, he is super, super heavily involved in the production of them.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just the actor in them. And I got to pull up the actual quote. Okay. It's too...
I will say I'm not surprised that they've had beef because Dwayne Johnson is one of the best and nicest guys on the face of the earth. And Vin Diesel has a record of kind of being an idiot and a bit of a scumbag, especially with like women. So I'm not surprised that they have beef.
It's okay. It's too good. It was a tough character to embody, the Hobbs character, Diesel told Men's Health. My approach at the time was a lot of tough love to assist in getting that performance where it needed to be. As a producer, to say, okay, we're going to take Dwayne Johnson, who's associated with wrestling, and we're going to force the cinematic world audience members to regard his character as someone they don't know. Hobbs hits you like a ton of bricks. But that's something that I'm proud of, that aesthetic. It took a lot of work. We had to get there, and sometimes at that time, I could give a lot of tough love. Not Fellion-esque, but I would do anything I'd have to do in order to get performances in something I'm producing. Fellion-esque is known for being one of the best directors of all time. Fellion is his name. He's an Italian director.
Okay.
So, basically, what Vin Diesel is saying is that, you know, I had to get him there. His performance wasn't up to snuff. Coming from Vin Diesel.
I was about to say, Vin Diesel is not a good actor.
His performance wasn't up to snuff, so I had to work with him on his acting.
Vin Diesel is not a good actor.
Coming from Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel's talking about The Rock.
Neither of these guys are actors. They're just both large muscle men that have been put in movies.
Who play themselves.
I mean, I was going to say, to sit there and, I mean, even the Luke Hobbs in, like, the Fast and Furious, like, beforehand was already, I mean, it's just Dwayne The Rock Johnson with a badge.
But well, you can tell when you watch the prior movies, he really is trying to act. They took a lot of the comedy out from Dwayne Johnson. They made him a lot more serious of a character than
which
he normally plays.
Which is not his forte at all.
They really tried to, they weren't true.
His forte is like sarcastic comedy kind of stuff like that.
It was him, he was really trying to act as a character. Instead of just being himself.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's still The Rock, and everybody still sees him and goes, oh, that's
of
The
course,
Rock.
Of course, yeah.
But he really was trying to act as somebody else.
But here's
the thing.
Which,
in my opinion, makes him not as good.
Here's the thing. Neither of those guys are actors, because they don't act. But here's the thing. Everyone wants to go see something with Dwayne Johnson in it, because he's so charismatic and, like, a genuinely just good guy all around, like, just as a person. Vin Diesel is neither of those things. So the fact that he's, like, criticizing Dwayne Johnson's performance, I'm like, but people want to see him perform, even if it's bad. They don't care about you. You're just in this franchise.
I mean, you can kind of get the way this movie is going in, like, the first, like, 15, 30 minutes. Especially whenever your supporting cast is Ryan Reynolds and Kevin Hart.
Okay, so for people who aren't aware, even in the credits, they are uncredited.
Yeah, because there it's supposed to be a surprise.
Anywhere that says that they are in this movie, it was not in any promotion. Nope. It was not in anything.
No trailers.
So when I went
nothing.
To go see this in theaters, and Ryan Reynolds popped up, I lost my mind. And then when Kevin Hart pops out, we all just the entire theater was just dying.
See, I didn't know that they were supposed to be surprise characters. And the other night we were talking about that movie, like in front of Russell and Candace, and Sam. And I hadn't seen it, obviously. I didn't know it was supposed to be a surprise. And I was like, oh, yeah, isn't Kevin Hart in that? And Sam just takes a deep breath and was like, that's supposed to be, like, a surprise. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. Because, again, I've only heard it from the podcast. And I assumed when Nicole was like, is that Kevin Hart? That she just, like, had just forgotten that he was in the movie. I didn't know it was supposed to be, like, a surprise. Yeah. But yeah, we actually need to get into this plot now. So, in London, Hattie Shaw and her team of MI6 agents attempt to retrieve a programmable supervirus dubbed Snowflake from techno-terrorist organization, is it Etion?
Etion.
Etion, okay. Brixton Lore, which is, by the way, the coolest name ever.
Brixton is a great name.
Brixton Lore is an amazing name. An Etion operative with cybernetic implants that allow him to perform superhuman feats arrives and kills all the agents except Hattie, who injects the only dose of Snowflake into herself before escaping. Brixton frames Hattie for killing her team and stealing Snowflake, forcing her to go on the run. Which, here's my number one question of this movie. She didn't have to inject it into herself.
No, she didn't. It was a plot setup.
Even at the end, they just take it right back out and put it back in the vial. Like, she could have just taken the vial and ran. Yep. Like, I don't know. I told Sam, I guess it kind of makes sense because then they had to keep her alive. Like, they couldn't kill her with it in her body because then it would have died.
Right. I think on paper, it was a, like, an immunity factor of, like, if I do get caught,
they can't kill me.
They can't kill me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she did just witness this man take out, like, a six-man MI6 squad
by
himself.
I mean, yeah. He is Black Superman.
So. He is Black Superman.
I'm Black Superman.
Oh, that line at the end by The Rock was fantastic.
He really is Black Superman. Here comes the kryptonite.
As he suplexes him on a cliff, on a cliff rock.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, Dwayne Johnson.
But yeah, that was my biggest question, was like, okay, so that she didn't have to inject it. She just did that because they needed a reason for there to be a time crunch, and that was it. Shortly after the confrontation against cyber terrorist Cypher, Luke Hobbs and Deckard Shaw are both informed of the missing virus and are reluctantly recruited to work together to track it down. So let's unpack how we get introduced to these guys, because it was great.
That, honestly, cinematically, that was gorgeous.
Honestly, the whole movie is really well shot.
Oh, it's very well shot. I mean, with the budget, are you kidding me? This just literally, like, a minute and a half into this movie of them getting introduced, I just, like, was beaming, and I just looked at Sam and was like, I love this, and it's so stupid. Like, it's amazing. You see the whole, like, them side by side in the morning, and, like, Jason Statham's got a girl, and Dwayne Johnson's drinking eggs, and it's like, okay. But then you see them both, like, fight people where, I don't remember what Dwayne Johnson was doing, but Jason Statham comes in, and he's like, you could call me a champagne problem, and then picks up a champagne bottle and starts fighting people with it.
It's so stupid, and I love it.
And
then the classic line of, I thought it would break.
Yeah.
And drops the champagne bottle.
I know,
because Dwayne Johnson walks and he's like, I'm what you call a nice cold can of whoop-ass. And then Jason Statham being like, I'm what you might call a champagne problem.
So stupid. It's so dumb.
I think Dwayne
it.
Is in, like, an LA nightclub or something, I want to say.
Yeah.
Something
like that.
They're both doing the same thing. They're looking for information on the virus.
Yeah, that's what they're looking for. Yeah. But there was... I only remembered the champagne scene because of something that they mentioned in the podcast, because Nicole Byer was a guest, and she was just, like... I thought the champagne bottle was going to be important. And then he just broke it at the end. And they were all like, well, he was done using it. And she was like, so drink it. Don't waste the alcohol. And I was like, honestly, I'm kind of with her. You just won a fight using a champagne bottle. It would have been super baller if he had just like popped the top and just like started drinking out of it. That would have been awesome. But yeah, that whole thing. And especially when he lowers the guy out of the window with just the rope around his neck. It's right. just around his neck, so that guy has to keep himself bored straight, or else he's going to go crumpling to the earth. Like, there has to be the perfect amount of leverage, and he has to be, like, stiff as a board.
He's stuck there.
To stay up. And then he just ties him there. And I'm like, if this guy moves even one muscle in his body, he's plummeting to the earth. Like, he just left him there. It's so weird, man. This movie is great. So shortly after, I already said that. Okay, after a brief meeting at a CIA black site at Leadenhall Building, Deckard goes to Hattie's apartment for information, only to get attacked by Etion operatives, while Hobbs manages to find Hattie.
I love the idea that MI6 hadn't been to her apartment yet.
Yeah, why had they not been there? Why was that not the first place they went?
You would think.
Like, he goes in there and she has set
and
up...
And it's also one of my favorite things. Earlier in the movie, there... The voiceover is saying that she's completely disappeared. As you see her walk into her apartment.
Yeah. It's like, she's gone. It's like, hold on. This is supposed to be the CIA. You're telling me that they didn't immediately go to her apartment. It's so stupid, man. And not... Can we talk about the grenade? So he walks in and she has set up this booby trap where there's a little tripwire across the bottom of the door where if you pull the tripwire, it pulls the pin on this grenade. Now, he knows his sister because it's revealed later that she's his sister. So he sees it and steps over it. But these operatives end up triggering it somehow. I don't remember how. Somewhere in the fight.
They were fighting. And,
yeah, it was during the fight. Yeah.
Shaw rammed one of them into the little... sticky pudding or whatever they had on the on the wall, and they dislodged it and the pin fell out and
yes
across the floor,
and he finishes the fight. The grenade has still not blown up. It's just sitting there blinking.
That's a long
and
grenade
he dives
time.
For the pin and puts it back in the grenade.
It's even better because you hear the little tink.
It's so good.
It's like,
it's amazing. I out loud laughed and was like, that's how grenades work. You can just put the pin back in.
Solid.
Also, I didn't realize for a while. So the thing around her neck is both a lockpick and it looks like a grenade pin, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I didn't realize that for a while until he called it her pin. And I was like, oh, it does look like a grenade pin. And that makes sense. She really likes grenades, I guess. Also, I meant to say something about this when we were watching, but I didn't want to interrupt like 10 seconds into the movie. When she throws the grenade at the beginning of the movie, she throws it about 10 feet away from her. And then it blows up. And she just keeps running, like, into the smoke like nothing has happened. And I'm like, you would have been blown backwards. She took it and didn't throw it. She gently toss-rolled it. And it literally went 15 feet away from her before it blew up.
Yep. It looked to have been some sort of specialized grenade.
It wasn't smoke, though, because there was fire.
No, like, but that's what I'm saying, though.
I thought, oh, it must be a smoke grenade. That's why she just tossed it 10 feet. It was not a smoke grenade.
It might have been an incendiary grenade where it wasn't necessarily explosive as much as it was.
Because, I mean, it was shaped similarly like a flashbang or a smoke.
Maybe, but it was not smoke because I was like, oh, okay. And it wasn't smoke. It like, blew up. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, so she's done. And then, no, she's fine.
She's still here.
It was so weird. But yeah, so after a brief scuffle, he brings her to the CIA office as Deckard then arrives and informs Hobbs that Hattie is actually his sister. I love that there's that whole fight where she's actually doing well, like, you know, manipulating the rock. And then he just picks her up in the air.
Yeah, he just picks her up and like, subtle all right,
flex.
We're done.
Subtle flex.
He just picks her up with one hand and go, okay, let's talk. Like, it was so good. Because she was actually doing okay. Like, you know, she was holding her own.
She was holding her own, yeah.
She was able to... She flipped him at one point. I was like, all right, cool. And then he just picks her up. And I was like, all right, well, you're done now. But yeah, so the office is attacked, and Hattie is taken by Brixton, whom Deckard recognizes as an old colleague turned enemy he'd previously shot and supposedly killed. But as we've learned in this franchise, no one who dies is actually dead. They will come back. And if they were bad guys before, they'll be good guys now. Because that was one thing they said in the podcast, is they were like, if we've learned anything from this franchise, it's that Idris Elba will come back and he'll be a good guy in about two movies.
Yeah, that tracks.
But yeah, so... Yeah, Hobbs...
For anybody who doesn't know, the character of Shaw was a Fast and Furious villain.
Yeah, he killed Han, who was also not a good person. Yeah. Because that was another thing they talked about.
You know, Han was one of the main characters. He was supposedly one of the good guys.
Supposedly. But he was not a good guy.
None of them are really good guys.
Well, no. I mean, something they talked about on the podcast, because again, I have never seen an actual Fast and Furious movie, but they talked about, because Jason was like, justice for Han, and they were all like, dude, Han literally watched a school bus of children blow up. He blew up a street with a school bus of children on it, knowing there was a school bus of children, and he still blew up the street. He watched it explode, and he was like, eh, it's fine, and just like walked away. Like, he's not a good person. No justice for him. It's okay that he's dead, but he's not. He's back now. Yeah. If you don't know that, he's already back. But yeah, so Hobbs and Deckard pursue and rescue Hattie, and during an ensuing car chase, for some reason, Wikipedia thought it was important that I know that it's a McLaren 720S, managed to escape from Brixton, who crashes into a double-decker bus. However,
that was a really, really cool shot.
It was.
And a cool idea, although, I mean, who knows how many people died. But...
yeah.
Well, no, did you see? The bus was empty.
Oh.
It was an empty bus. Why was nobody on the bus?
It's a double-decker?
There was no one
on
the bus.
To scare the indictment of the British public transportation system.
There was literally nobody on that bus. But yeah, so, however, Brixton frames all three as traitors who, because he is apparently in control of the global news media. Which, here's my question. So, they become, like, the big face of everything. She kind of just disappears off the face of media. Like, no one's talking about her, but she's the one they're supposed to all be looking for.
Yeah, I was about to say, you would think that they would put it out about her, but they don't.
They would put out all three. Like, just put out everyone's face. And then when they go to... This is something they talked about on the podcast, so I was very excited to see it. When they go to the airport, she is fully disguised. She looks like a different person. Like, she's got a different, like, you know, wig going on. She has a, like,
and then Shaw
a different personality.
Just...
Shaw is just himself in a beanie, and that's
and
his
so,
disguise.
And The Rock is just himself with
a beret
mustache.
And a mustache, and that's it. I was just like, what are these disguises? Y'all's faces are the ones all over everything.
Again, that's one of the comedic moments of where, like, this film should not be taken seriously.
No, it's so stupid.
It clearly just establishes the characters.
Yes. And that's when, we'll get there in a second. So the three locate Professor Andrako, who explains that he created Snowflake to efficiently deliver vaccines and to prevent Etion from using the super virus to eradicate human life. Oh my gosh, where is it? Hattie, while the virus is still dormant, must either be cremated or have the virus removed with a specialized extraction device, which is located in Etion's special facility in Chernobyl, Ukraine. That was something that I had been confused about. I was like, wait, they said 72 hours. It's definitely been 72 hours since she's had this thing in her body and she's fine. But then the scientist guy mentioned that you have 72 hours until it disperses through your body. Until the capsules break down.
Yeah, until the capsules rupture.
Yeah, because then, like, and then you have, I think, 72 hours after that before you're absolutely dead. Like, you have a little bit of time to kind of get your affairs in order before you're dead. So he was just like, yeah, you gotta kill her. Oh, or you could try to break into this facility and she'll die anyway. And they're like, cool, okay.
Very generous to, you know, give the capsules a time limit before they pop.
Yes. Because, you know, you gotta have the pressure of time. Right. Otherwise, there's no action movie. So although Hobbs was briefly detained due to Deckard making his fake alias...
My cock small.
The three managed to travel to Moscow, which this was one thing.
I go by Michael.
It's just so stupid because he walks up and they look at his name and they're like, what? Like, okay. And he's like, I go by Michael. And then they scan it and it says he's denied and he has to get detained. And it was on purpose because Jason Statham like rigged it to where it would, you know, trigger when he walked through because he just didn't want him coming with them. And then he gets on the plane, fine. He gets on the plane and he's like, people like me. They just let me go. And I'm like, we didn't get to see that scene of how he got out? Like,
there's probably in deleted scenes.
Maybe, I don't know. Or they just were like, nah, it's fine. After rendezvousing with Deckard's former flame, Margaret, I don't know about former, they like made out the second they met each other. Oh, they hardcore, like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know about former flame, Margarita. To rearm in Moscow, the three infiltrate the facility. Which, before we go any further, we have seen both of these secret actors at this point, both Ryan Reynolds and Kevin Hart.
Yes, we have.
Ryan Reynolds has a purpose, sort of. He is like someone who, I guess, has worked with Dwayne Johnson or knows him from something.
They're best friends.
According to Ryan Reynolds. And he's just hilarious, as always. And then Kevin Hart just appears as the air marshal.
Yep.
And I remember about 5 minutes into the scene, I looked at Sam and went, what is the purpose of this scene?
It's just to have Kevin Hart in it.
It's just to have Kevin Hart. Because he just kept talking about nothing.
And a way for them to get to Samoa.
He just kept talking about nothing. And I was like, Kevin Hart, until the end of the scene.
Plot device, that's the only plot device that that character serves.
No.
Is they hook them up with a ride to Samoa.
Yes, but that came up at the end of a 5-minute conversation where he's just like, yeah, man, you know, I was in this and I did this. And it's like, dude, no one asked.
Predators stuck together up in the sky.
And I was just like, what is happening in this scene? Nothing is happening until the last 30 seconds when he like tells them he can hook them up. And I'm like, okay, this could have been a 30 second scene and you made it 5 minutes. It was so ridiculous. But another thing that I want to address before we go further is we've seen Dwayne Johnson's daughter a few times at this point.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she's sassy, she's independent, she's great. I liked the girl that played her a lot. Something that they mention in the How Did This Get Made episode that I just want to bring up is that this guy, Hobbs, is talking to his daughter and then immediately jumping out of windows with no plan and, you know, jumping on the side of vehicles and doing all, like, he was FaceTiming his daughter and then just went, okay, yeah, I'll see you at home, hung up and then leaped out of a window. And I'm like, but dude, she doesn't have a mom that we know of. She's just living with, like, her babysitter. If you die, that's it. And like, dude, this guy's not a good dad. Like, he has a good relationship with her, I guess, but he is not a good dad. It is seen very often.
Look, he's got to save the world, okay?
Also, I love how the classic The Rock fashion on cheat day, he has, like,
like, 20...
That's 20. A real thing, okay? If you follow him on Instagram...
That's literally his cheat day.
Those are straight up his cheat meals. It's
like
insane.
20 pancakes?
Yes.
Oh my god.
He loves pancakes. Pancakes is one of his favorite meals. He eats massive cookies a lot. He'll have a plate of cookies that are like the size of your face, and he'll have like 8 of them, and he'll have like a gallon of milk sitting there, and he's like, cheat day dessert, and it's like, what is wrong with you?
Dude.
He brought it. The waitress kept bringing out food. Like, she put, you know, the plate of the girl's food and then 10 other plates, including a stack of 20 pancakes.
What's...
And I turned to Sam and went, is this Shaggy and Scooby's lunch? Like, this straight up looks like it's out of Scooby-Doo.
What's even funnier is...
It's gonna be pretty good, man.
What's even funnier is that, like, they bring out, like, a 5-stack of pancakes. And they hand it to the Rock and they're like, he's like, oh, no. That's not for me. And then they just bring a 20-stack... It's like, there we go, cheat day. It's like,
that's the most ridiculous. I mean, clearly he can afford it. Like, I mean, not afford it monetarily, but even body wise, like he can afford it. But because you know,
how many calories that man's
in? I was about to say he's got to take in so many calories per day.
As big as he is,
yeah.
Well, I wish I remembered the line fully, but that whole line of where they're talking about Shaw's sister. It's like, if she wants to climb this...
if she wants to climb this mountain, I'll let her climb it over and over again. Which I did, I did appreciate that this was, you know, clearly in, you know, in 2019, because it wasn't like, you know, yeah, I'm going after your sister, I'm gonna bed your sister. It was like, nah, if she wants it, she can have it. Like, you know, I just thought that was a better way of going about it than like most movies will do, where he's just like, nah, I'm a getter. And it's like, are you hunting her? Like, just leave her alone. But I also enjoyed that there wasn't really a whole lot of that in this movie. That's kind of what I, like, picture with action movies, is just gratuitous romance and sex scenes all over the place. And I'm very glad that that wasn't really a thing.
That's not really Dwayne Johnson's style, though. It never really has been.
No.
I can't think of a single Dwayne Johnson movie where that's kind of his style.
Well, maybe, yeah, I guess you're right.
Most of that's just not him.
Most of that...
It is Jason Statham.
I was about to say, it's definitely Jason Statham.
Most of the interactions with Dwayne The Rock Johnson in his action films, especially with the female roles, is that it'll often, like, towards the end, it'll finally start to get underway, and then normally it'll end before it actually, like, gets to the heavy romance stuff.
Like,
they'll kiss,
but that's, exactly. Like, the furthest
like,
it goes.
The sunset scene that they had together was at, like, the very end of the movie. Granted, yeah, you could tell that there was romantic tension. You knew what was going to happen. However, they just played it out to the end, and then it didn't get any further serious than that.
Yeah. I can respect that, though. Good for him. Let me see. Where was I? Okay. So they managed to retrieve the extraction device before escaping. However, Andreyko is killed, and the device was damaged during their escape and the facility's destruction. So yeah, they break in. They're doing this whole thing, where they have let your girl get captured, so that she can get in there right next to the extraction device, because they are trying to extract it from her. They just don't want the three don't want Etion to extract it within their facility, where they can immediately, you know, start using it for bad things. Which I guess my question is, and maybe I just don't know science well enough, but again, how on earth do you program a virus? Like, how? Does it have, like, microchip stuff in it? I don't understand how you program, like, a virus to target certain DNA. I don't understand it.
Well, I mean, that was kind of the whole point. Science
mumbo jumbo.
The point was it was weird because they said they want to target certain DNA, like the weaker DNA strand. But then they said they made it earlier for all DNA strands compatibility.
Yeah.
So, like, at that point, like, if you're not part machine, does that mean technically everyone dies?
I don't know.
Again,
like,
it's a big old plot hole from a movie that shouldn't be taken all
that
seriously.
Well, I think that may have also been why Etion was trying to bring it in, is because when it was, like, activated for their means, they hadn't had time to input the DNA they're trying to target.
Maybe.
And so they were like, we don't actually want everyone dead, because that wasn't their goal. Their goal was, you know, survival of the fittest, kind of like, you know, Darwinism, whatever. We want to kill everybody off that is weak and just keep the strong, and then cyber genetically enhance them.
Yeah.
So I think they may have genuinely been like, we want it back as fast as possible so we can fix it and then kill the people we want to kill. Because otherwise, if it's in y'all's hands and it erupts, everyone's dead. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah, Andreyko is killed after leaping out and going, I'm not small change, and flamethrowering everybody and everything in the room. Just blasting him with this flamethrower.
Concussive force, apparently, for that flamethrower was enough to throw his elbow over a desk.
I know.
I'm like, is that amazing. How? Is that how flamethrowers?
I don't think that's how flamethrowers work.
It's not.
It's like it had a concussive air blast.
Yeah.
Alongside, I was like, I'm not a professional at this matter, but I don't think that's how that works.
No, I love that whole scene. That was great. But Hobbs takes the trio to his childhood home in Samoa, which I didn't know that that's actually where Dwayne Johnson has lived for a portion of his life, or at least had lived.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that he was part Samoan.
I don't know if he ever lived there, but that's his heritage.
Yeah, I didn't know.
He is Samoan.
I didn't know that he was part Samoan, so I thought that was cool. That they just, like, decided to integrate, like, his culture into the movie. I thought it was really cool.
And I want to say a lot of his actual, like, relatives made up a lot of the...
I think some of the extras were his relatives.
Maybe.
I know.
None of the main characters were.
Yeah, let's see. Hang on.
Like, none of the main family, I don't think.
WWE superstar Roman Reigns was one of them. Yeah. He's a cousin.
He was the one that apparently Dwayne Johnson was pushing to be Jonah. He was like, I want that guy to be
Jonah. I was surprised he didn't play a more significant part.
Dwayne Johnson's dad was black and his mom is Samoan.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought that was really cool that they decided to just, like, put his actual, like, you know, cultural heritage in there, and I thought that was awesome. And apparently he was specifically, like, really pushing for, you know, adding in, you know, Hobbs's family and making sure that they were all, like, you know, Polynesian actors and all that, and I thought that was really cool.
That was great.
So they go to visit his estranged brother Jonah, who is a talented mechanic, to get help repairing the device and lay low before confronting Brixton again. Which, I mean, Brixton was coming to him, so, you know. I don't know if they were laying low, really, because he knew exactly where they were. Which, by the way, his mom is fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
The woman who plays his mom.
And I really find, again, the comedy of the writing of this script is fantastic. Because just the little brother... The fact that Luke, this mountain of a man, compared to Jonah, who's not at all built like Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
He's not small, but he's not as giant as he is.
Like, I want to say next, unless you're, like, looking at the Roman Reigns character, compared, like, it's not even close. Like, they're two different sizes.
Yeah.
But, man, again, the comedy for that's fantastic. I'm like... Classic Dwayne The Rock Johnson being the little brother and being a 6-foot-tall giant of a man. It's like, great.
I just loved when they're arguing and you just see a flip-flop hit the side of his head.
We cannot forget the hallway fight scene, though.
Oh, where they're both, like, doing the two simultaneous things.
I love the toss wrench one hand, yeah. Toss wrench next hand. Toss wrench. Dwayne just...
One punch, and he just... And then he's, like, yawning while Statham's fighting.
Statham's
so
fighting, like, 10 people, and Dwayne Johnson
just, like...
Which is
arguably a more impressive feat than what Dwayne The Rock Johnson just did.
Yes. Absolutely.
But, and then they sit there while... Okay, that was another thing I pointed out during that scene. They said they have to, you know, keep the guys alive.
Right.
Because they have to do the retinal scanners. Every time they put their face against it, their eyes are closed! Every time! What are you talking about, retinal scanner?
I saw that and I'm like, how are they...
It worked on Dwayne Johnson's side. He put the guy's closed eyes up and just smashed his face against it, and it worked. And I went, how? And then on Statham's side, it wasn't working. And I'm like, maybe because their eyes are closed. That's probably why.
So stupid.
Oh my gosh, it was so dumb. It reminded me of that scene in Get Smart where Steve Carell's, like, trying to scan his own eye and has to, like, pick up the guy he just knocked out and, like, open his eye to get it to scan and get out of there. It was so ridiculous. But yeah, so Hobbs has a tense reunion with his family, but Jonah is eventually persuaded to help them by their mother. The makeshift battalion prepares for Etienne's arrival, setting up a variety of traps around the island, which, it was interesting. It's almost like an anti-gun, like message, like public service announcement, where she's like, no guns, only these. And Dwayne Johnson's like, so we're fighting with family heirlooms? Is that what we're doing? Because that's all that they have are just like big clubs and hammers.
Old
like
Samoan
old tribal weapons. That's all that they have.
I tell you what, you gotta love a good haka though.
Because he was just like, what happened to the guns? And she's like, I got rid of all of them. And they're just like, well, we're screwed. This is gonna go poorly.
And then magically, you know, like, I can hack the entire... How did that happen? From a glove.
Straight up, their guns shut down, and I went, Sam,
a chip activated.
How did they do that?
She had a glove that had a chip in it. Yeah.
Okay.
She had a glove that had a chip in it, and supposedly she, like, reverse engineered it from that or something. I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Mm-mm. She had it hooked up to, like, this thing is, like, a, like, 1900s computer. This thing is not
new. It's not like a Mac.
She has this thing like classic like movie hacker style jerry-rigged this eon old computer to just magically turn off the guns for like six For, minutes. Like First everyone. Off, why would you have your guns electrically tied to anything?
Yeah, and it's a stupid thing because they're like, oh, that way other people can't use them. But it's like, the negatives of that far outweigh the positives.
Yeah, right. Like, that's just, it's, I was so confused. All their guns got shut down and I went, huh? Like, I was just so confused. I will say it was pretty awesome. I did like the flamethrower on the side of the car, another Hot Wheels style thing where Statham just surrounded them with fire. I thought that was pretty cool. Pretty cool. I like that.
I really love how like Brixton like silently says to himself, Shaw. Like, Shaw. It's like, it's like he just knows that I'd be the one person driving a flamethrower truck around the encampment.
Oh my gosh. But they prepare. Jonah successfully repairs the device and starts the virus extraction just as Brixton and his army arrive. So this is where your girl's wearing a blood machine for the rest of the movie, basically. She has this like extraction machine strapped onto her back. And she's,
I mean, it's, yeah, it's literally just a glorified, yeah, like, blood extraction.
Yeah, and because that's all it is, I didn't understand why it took 30 minutes to get it out, because in the little zoom-in video, the capsule gets sucked into the extraction thing immediately. And I'm like, I get that there are three, but, like, I don't know. I don't know. I was confused, but I guess it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Quote
unquote spread itself.
I guess.
Because, I mean, in the tube, it's concentrated.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Dude,
we're trying to apply logic to a movie
that has none.
Shouldn't.
It has no logic. Because let's not forget about this truck scene with the helicopter. We have to talk about it.
I love it.
So Dwayne Johnson is on the back of this truck that's like, it's not a fancy truck.
No, it's just a tow truck.
It's just a tow truck. And Statham is driving it. And over the wind and the sound of this helicopter, Dwayne Johnson takes out this hook. He whips it around and like lasso catches the helicopter. And somehow, yep, this military grade helicopter with powerful rotors is held to the ground by this tow truck.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
And the scene continues and all their brothers create a chain of cars holding it down because it starts lifting the tow truck off the ground, and they're like, we need to make a chain, and they straight up for 3 minutes show cars, yes, driving up, yes, and hooking on to them.
They show like three featured, two we saw on multiple occasions, and then the other one who's just a random, like, the in-between guy. I'm like, I don't remember seeing you in this film at all.
I could what not relevance stop do you serve? Laughing because there were just so many issues with what I was seeing. I was like, this is the dumbest scene I've ever seen.
I lost it. I lost it whenever the big guy came in.
I was dying. It's like, because first
we
off,
need more weight.
I know.
The big guy's just like,
no, because
and with the chain, when he,
I know! When, oh my god.
Incredible.
They make this train of cars, which, by the way, it straight up is like Hot Wheels style.
It is.
Guys all get in a row. They go, all right, I'm ready. They hit this eject button on their car, and the chains magically hook out exactly where they're supposed to go on the other car. And they're all, like, speeding down the road. It's a chain of cars, like, holding this helicopter down. And then they're like, time for the turbo boost, or whatever they did.
Because it's not a Fast and Furious Presents if there's not turbo.
And apparently, this was my physics issue, is so the guy in the front hits the turbo boost, so you'd think it would yoink everyone forward, but then everyone else starts hitting turbo boost, and you'd think they'd be running into everyone in front of them, because they don't hit it at the same time. They're all hitting it at different times. So how are they not fender-bendering each other, like, every single second? But then it gets disconnected on Dwayne Johnson's end, which another thing we said was there's no way Statham and Johnson will be able to hear each other.
No, they, not at
there's
all.
So much wind and noise,
with
and
the
Statham
helicopter
is just barely yelling, all right, we gotta pull it down. And Dwayne Johnson's like, I got it, man. And I'm like, this is what you would hear. That's what you would hear from the back. You would not hear anything specific.
Again, logic we're trying to apply to it. Clearly a logical film.
But he takes... the chain breaks off of the thing that Dwayne Johnson has been trying to reel in the helicopter on, this, like, chain thing. It breaks free. He catches the chain and is somehow holding this military helicopter down. And then he just takes Incredible. It and just... places it back on the little like reel in thing.
To be fair, they actually do obey a little bit of physics here, just barely, not really. Shaw does kind of break a little bit to give the slap.
That's, so that's fine. Yeah. But when he catches it and then he puts it back on, all he doesn't thread it through anything. He just places it and starts reeling. And I'm like, how did that attach to anything? It didn't. Magnets. It has to be a super magnet if it's doing this much work. Like, oh my God. It was such an amazing scene. I was dying laughing.
That was truly an iconic scene.
It was so good.
No man's land scene.
In the ensuing battle, which another thing I pointed out to Sam was, Hobbs and his brother, Jonah, have this emotional moment where Hobbs, like, admits that he was wrong to, like, abandon his family. He's like, I'm never gonna do it again. And then they start the fight, and Dwayne Johnson books it out of there after Brixton. And all his brothers are still fighting all the other soldiers in the encampment. And he sees your girl getting taken in the helicopter, and he, again, abandons his family to go rescue her. And I was like, what happened to you just telling him you weren't going to do that again?
I mean, he was talking about abandoning, like, leaving...
But it was just the timing of it. Yeah. Right after he said, I'm never going to do that again, abandons his family 5 minutes later.
Plus, the Samoans, I think, clearly had the upper hand in this case.
Oh, clearly. I mean, you watched them in the fight, and they had a fighting style these guys could not handle, like, dude, at all.
I love a good haka, and that was a good haka.
He retakes Hattie in the helicopter. The Samoans suffer minimum casualties because they're just, you know, kicking ass. So he retakes Hattie. They all bring the aircraft down with their trucks. And then they plummet. They plummet off of a cliff.
Into a little waterfall.
You see Dwayne Johnson and Statham fall into waterfall where the water is real shallow. It is not deep water.
Well, at least from the perspective we had.
Yes, it looked very shallow.
But no, apparently it's like a good, like, you know. It's
fine. Because they came out, and again, Statham pulled a Legolas, and he just had a little dirt on his face. Yeah. He had no injuries. He wasn't limping. Dwayne Johnson had a touch of blood on the side of his face, and that was it. Your girl has a gash down the side of her face.
She gets beat up more than anybody in the movie.
It's so dumb. Which also, something that in the episode on How This Get Made, Nicole points out, and I noticed it too, her makeup designer either needs to get fired or was non-existent. Because her makeup looked like not film-level makeup for the entire thing. It looked like, and Nicole points this out, I'm stealing this observation from her, it straight up looks like they just said, just do your own makeup. Because it's not, like, bad, but it's not professional grade.
The makeup only really stood out to me, like, being as problematic corny, is whenever the interrogation scene earlier on in the film, after she has, like, a bout with Dwayne The Rock Johnson like, a solid scene, it looked a little rough.
Her wings were awful. Her eyeliner was what drove me insane. I was looking at it and I was like, first off, in these movies, what I've noticed is that everyone mostly, until they're in battle, look flawless. Like, in these types of movies. Like, they have the perfect, like, sheer airbrush look going on. That was not what she had. Her eyeliner was trash, and I was just like, hun, your makeup designer really needs to be fired, because she or he was clearly not on their game for this entire filming thing. I am convinced that they just said, you can just do it yourself. Because for a person doing it themselves, just like a person, it's fine, but not for film level, like, makeup. I was like, you need to get fired. You need a different makeup artist. But yeah, again, she's, like, all bloodied up. They look fine. Of course, you know, Idris Elba is fine. That makes 100% sense, because he's a cyborg.
He's a cyborg.
I didn't expect him to be hurt. But also the other guy on the plane, was he a cyborg? He works for Etion, but they didn't say if he's a cyborg. And he just wakes up fine. He's like, cool, I'm here.
He doesn't wake up fine. I mean, he's clearly like...
Well, he's hurt, very but like...
screwed up.
He's got like a little bit of a concussion, but I think that's it. He doesn't have any outward injuries that you can see. Because all you see is him like kind of shaking his head every now and then, like he's got a concussion. But like, that's it. You don't see any like external injuries. He might have some internal stuff, but I don't see anything external.
Because he's also a little more padded, quote unquote.
I mean, that's fair. He does have armor, so I guess that makes sense. But like everybody else does not have armor. They should have been way more hurt than they were.
Oh, absolutely.
But they fall down in this thing. Working together, Hobbs and Deckard defeat Brixton. Because again, the third act twist is that they discover the power of teamwork. They're sitting there trying to fight him with their own styles.
Literally the and whole he's advantage able... of having a 2v1 scenario.
They finally figure it out. It finally
kicks in.
Because they're trying to fight him with their own styles, and he's able to immediately calculate what they're going to do because he's a cyborg. And then they go, wait. If one of us gets hit, the other one can hit him. And it's like, yeah, guys, we've known this the whole time. It's so good. I love it. But yeah, so they defeat him, and he's remotely terminated afterwards by Etion's unseen director. The director sends a message claiming to know Hobbs and intending to persuade him and Shaw and the Shaw siblings while they promise to find the director. And the group celebrates their victory. In mid and post-credit scenes, Hobbs brings his daughter to meet their extended family in Samoa. Deckard and Hattie are implied to bust their mother out of prison, which is Helen Mirren, and, yep. So she's amazing. And Hobbs receives a call from his partner Locke, aka Ryan Reynolds, informing him that he had broken into a facility and discovered another virus worse than the Snowflake virus, which was just the most like kid movie thing ever. I loved it.
There's another virus.
Where he's like, there's another virus. It sounded to me like Threat Level Midnight, where he's like, I need you for another mission. That's what it sounded like to me. And then Hobbs also secretly has the London police set on Deckard in retaliation for the Mike Oxmall prank, which Hobbs told the police that Deckard's name was Hugh Janus.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
And that is Hobbs and Shaw, guys.
Yay! I love this movie. Also, I don't know if you saw this. I was looking it up because I was curious. So, we have a theory, which is that...
Well, that is in my fun facts if you're about to say the thing about the director.
No.
Okay, then no.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'll let you do it
in the fun facts. Okay. Because that is in there. But yeah, huh. So do you guys have a... We'll get to it. If we had to rename this movie, what would it be?
The Rock and Statham.
Wow. You suck. I would definitely call it Champagne and Whoop Ass.
Just champagne problem.
Champagne problem.
We have to include both. So Champagne and Whoop Ass. Yes, John?
I hate this.
Okay.
But I think it fits the movie. Don Toretto's We're All Family.
Oh my god.
Because literally that's what happens. Just think about it. I kept waiting on
Dwayne Johnson to say like, we're not partners. We're family.
What
like,
happened?
That's what I kept waiting.
I am so confused at what prompted the meme community to just go, there's so many Vin Diesel memes running around of just...
Because the new movie just got released. F9 just got released.
It just got released. And that
specific picture that's being memed is from F9, I believe.
Yeah, but in every movie ever, he always says something like, we're not a team.
We're family.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
That's like the anime power of friendship argument. It's like, what?
All right, so I went on Amazon. The general consensus is okay. 72% rated it 5 stars. I picked a couple of good reviews and one negative review. So what do y'all want to hear first?
Let's go good first and then negative.
Okay, so the first one is just by a user C, just the letter C.
Oh,
and good. It's titled "What's Not to Love?" It's literally everything you could ask from a Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie and Jason Statham movie, but combined. I have to admit, I wasn't sure what kind of chemistry these two would have in this type of movie, given that they're both very alpha male and each is always the main character in themselves. However, I was wrong to doubt. I loved it. Idris Elba was so perfect for his role too. He did an amazing job playing the bad guy. Action-packed, explosions everywhere, and hilariously funny. My only request for Hobbs and Shaw 2 would be that they have a little more Ryan Reynolds in there. I swear to God, that man is effing hilarious. Hilariously memorable, even when he's just a side note in a movie. Yep. LOL, 5 stars.
Because Ryan Reynolds is incredible.
He's great.
Here's the thing, and I've noticed it on multiple occasions. If Ryan Reynolds is in a movie, he's gonna steal it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who the main star is. Ryan Reynolds is gonna be like...
Is gonna steal
it. I'm gonna become the most memorable person.
The only person who he maybe can't out, like, completely overshadow in a scene is Dwayne Johnson.
And that's just because he's Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Right.
And he can kind of match his level a little bit.
I would say they have the similar level of humor of just
yeah.
sarcastic, witty banter back and forth. But yeah.
But I got another positive one that I liked. This is called Major Penguin. Oh, sorry. It's by Major Penguin.
It's called Major Penguin.
I
love the idea of this of the review starting out with him introducing himself.
Hi, I'm Major Penguin.
This is Major Penguin.
That's his username. And it just says, really great movie. This is not a deep film. It does not have any unexpected twists and turns, nor does it require a lot of intellect to grasp the plot. It is a movie about saving the world by kicking a lot of ass, and it's about family. I thoroughly enjoyed what it has to offer and the message that that people, heart, and family is important. 5 stars. And then we got a negative review here. There are a couple on here, but I mean, they're both about the same. So I'll just read just the one. So this is from Owen, and it's titled, like, Dragging Balls Across Broken Glass. And it said, this movie is like Dragging Balls Across Broken Glass and is a very strong contender for the worst movie ever written, directed, and produced. How this movie snagged an all-star cast is an unsolvable mystery. They obviously didn't read the script before they signed on because it was written by a 10-year-old. We had to fast forward a lot to get through it. We want our money back. 1 star.
They missed the point.
They 100% missed the point.
Yeah, they didn't catch, everything went over there.
They did not get what they were... They didn't get the assignment.
They didn't get the assignment.
So, time to guess. What do y'all think this is rated on Rotten Tomatoes, critically, out of 100?
I want to say... I knew this at one time. I want to say it's somewhere around, like, 73%.
Okay.
72%, something like that.
Well, you got to pick one.
I'll go 73%.
Okay.
84%?
Well, Sam, you're closer. It's 67.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, 67% critically, and audience score, also out of 100.
I'm going to say 81%.
Okay.
I'm going to say 87%.
You're one away, John. It's 88. Yeah, you were so close.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And then IMDb out of 10.
I will say 7.2.
Okay.
I will say, since it did so well audience-wise, but so poorly critically, I'll say 7.7.
Sam is closer, 6.4.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's not a deep movie. I don't know why y'all expected the critical score to be higher than that.
I just remember that it was higher than expected.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say it's better than most. I want to say it did critically better than most Fast and Furious movies.
That's probably true.
Yeah,
look it up, Sam. But the budget for this one was $200 million. Box office, it made $760 million. And I really had to fish through these fun facts on IMDb because a lot of them just weren't interesting. So I had to try to find ones that were interesting. So this is something that Sam knew, but I didn't. When Hobbs and
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Only two movies in the Fast and Furious franchise have a better Rotten Tomatoes score, and that's Fast 5 and Furious 7.
So all the rest did worse.
All the rest did worse than Hobbs and Shaw.
Nice. So when Hobbs and the Shaws are getting their, you know, cars and stuff and, you know, all that before heading to Moscow, Hobbs is referencing all of the cars pertaining to Deckard Shaw overcompensating. When he gets to a Mini Cooper, he says, this is more like it. Shaw then claims he used it in a job in Italy.
Yep.
And this is a reference to Jason Statham's main character in The Italian Job in 2003.
Character?
Yeah, he was a main character.
I did not know that.
In which the heist featured Mini Coopers driving through a mansion. I didn't know that, but Sam was like, haha, I get it.
I didn't know he was a main character, but...
Yeah, it says Jason Statham was a main character.
Yeah, I knew it as an Edward Norton movie.
I mean, he may not have been the star, but he was a main character.
Right.
Idris Elba refused to say a scripted line for his character, calling himself the Black James Bond. He instead used the phrase Black Superman. Elba has been rumored to be in consideration for the role of James Bond and would be the first black actor to portray Bond.
I am pushing for that. I want that so bad.
He would be such a good,
incredible James Bond.
He would be such a good James Bond.
He really would.
I'm going to butcher his name because I don't know how to say it. Joe Anoa'i, a.k.a. the wrestler you've been referring to, the Roman guy.
Roman Reigns is a stage name.
He was actually recovering from treatment for leukemia when he shot his scenes.
Really?
Oh, he is related
to... Which I thought was pretty crazy.
Yeah, Roman...
He is related to Dwayne Johnson.
He's directly related. He's their cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why he wanted him to play his brother.
Yeah.
During the setup for the final battle, Hobbs wears a shirt with the number 7 on it. So this could be a reference to his production company, which I think is called like either 7 Bucks or 7 Bricks Productions.
7 Bucks.
And the fact that he is a 7-time WWE champion. During the London car chase, as Brickton's motorbike changes shape to slide under the oncoming truck, the iconic sound effect used during the transformations from the Transformers cartoons and movies can clearly be heard.
Love it.
I forgot to delete something. There we go. So Champ Nightingale, a.k.a. The voice of Etienne, of the Etienne director, this is what Sam was going to mention earlier, is actually a pseudonym of Ryan Reynolds. He provided the voice as a placeholder. The filmmakers are not yet committed as to the director's identity, and the character is not as yet intended to be the surprise villain.
Yeah, I picked it up in even the first time I saw it in theaters. Just the cadence of speech and everything. I was like, that's Ryan Reynolds.
I didn't hear it until towards the end. Towards the end, he said something, and I immediately went, okay, I heard it there. That's I hear what you're talking about. So they're not committed to it yet, but they might make him a surprise villain.
Hmm.
And yeah, those are the only interesting ones I could find. All the rest of them are really boring.
2 years older than Hattie.
And he's actually...
Jason Statham is 21 years older than Vanessa Kirby.
Yeah, I saw that in there, but I was like, I'm not going to put it in. Okay, so now if we were to recast this, there's only 2 women, so you can cast me as a dude if you want, but Sam, I really want you to be Ryan Reynolds. I really do.
That'd be interesting.
I know who I really want to be, and I want to see if y'all make me that person.
John will be the air marshal then.
Dinkley?
You'd be Dinkley.
No, John would be, who would John be?
I feel like John would be...
He could be Jonah.
I was going to say, he could be Jonah.
Let me see.
Although he's not Samoan.
No, I mean, you're not Samoan.
I mean, we've said it before. Yeah. If there's like, racially, like, inclinated roles, we're naturally just saying character archetypes.
Yeah.
We are not saying, actually,
we
would play a good Samoan.
Yeah. But you could play a good Jonah. I think you could do that well. Yeah.
Dan, yeah.
I know who I really want to be, and I'm going to see if you guys come up with it.
Actually, no. Danielle will be Dinkley.
That's so not who I wanted you to say.
100%.
That is so not who I think I would be. And I can't believe y'all aren't saying what I think I would be.
Danielle would be Dinkley. Who do you think you'd be, Helen Mirren?
No, I would be, I'm not small change. Flamethrower, everybody. I'd be the scientist Eddie guy. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
that would also work.
Dinkley or that would work.
I 100% think I would be the scientist guy.
That would also work, yes.
Mm. As soon as I thought, who could I be, that's who came to mind first.
You know, you say... I can see Samuel playing... yes, I can see Samuel playing the Ryan Reynolds. It's Locke, and then there's the other guy that has to talk to Shaw.
Yeah,
I can see him. I can see him playing the CIA agent.
Oh, I could see that.
He was so deadpan. I loved it.
Yes, he was just like, so this thing's happening.
Yeah,
like,
well, my guy beat me up in a bar 17 years ago,
and he doesn't remember me. So
I see Ben playing the Ryan Reynolds role.
I mean, yeah, he could.
He could pull it off.
Yeah, I could see you as either of those roles, Samuel. So, favorite and least favorite moments.
I have 2 favorite moments.
Okay.
As far as the least favorite.
I don't know that I have a least favorite. It was all awesome.
It was great. I know. That's the problem I'm running into.
My favorite was the car chain, because nothing's funnier to me than just than that whole helicopter car chain. Least favorite part of the movie was her makeup, by far. That needs to get fixed. It was just so terrible. Margarita looked fantastic, and that's how I know that they could have made her look better, and they chose not to. I was just like, wow.
Okay, so my favorite part of the movie is probably the opening duel fight scene with the split screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And my least favorite part of the movie is the time continuity.
Oh, yeah.
The time continuity is absolutely terrible.
It's non-existent.
There was a shot where, with Margarita, because they were all like, you know, all right, you know, how are you going to... how are you going to do that? She was all like, trust me. And then they cut to her giving Hattie to Brixton.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut right back to her saying bye to Hobbs and Shaw at the house.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it went from daytime to nighttime to daytime.
To back to daytime.
And it's like,
what?
What?
Excuse me? So, first favorite part is... the intro, the moment we meet Ryan Reynolds, the back and forth, I love it just because the humor is great.
And I also, okay, this might actually be my actual favorite moment just because it's so hilarious. When Hobbs is on the phone with his daughter and he's all like, yeah, you know, Locke's listening in. Hi. And Locke was like, hey, guys, you know, I'm here in the diner. Yeah, we had good times there. Yeah, good times.
Because remember?
Yeah. Nobody else is here. I think it's closed.
It's so stupid and I love it. Another thing that I kept mentioning to Sam is that they used the same camera thing where it was completely on Dwayne Johnson's face zoomed in and then completely on Statham's face zoomed in whenever they were talking to each other. Instead of having like an over the shoulder back and forth or like a from the side, you see both. It was always just his face back to Statham's face. Like they used that about 50 times in the movie and I just kept laughing every time I came back. It was so good.
Right. I mean, and my second favorite part was the haka. I just love the haka.
Oh yeah.
I mean, plus it had a giant explosion every hit the end of the haka, so it was just even better. At least favorite part? That's so hard, but I have to give it for the amount of, like, the setup thing that they had to do for the whole sequence, for the plan, wasn't super necessary, but...
Yeah, the whole montage, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't super, like, I love the line of, like, how long do I have to keep doing this? He's like... Keep digging, brother. It's like, all right.
It's like, I don't know how long. Just keep going.
Cool, we get to see all the traps that they set up. Awesome. Not really necessary.
No, it was not necessary. Especially not necessary to be as long as it was.
Right. But yeah, I'd say that's them.
So, all right. Out of 10 blood machines, what would you rate Hobbs and Shaw?
I'd give it a solid 8.4 blood machines.
All right.
It's really enjoyable. It's a good popcorn flick. It's not a good movie.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination, but it's also not supposed to be.
No.
The fight scenes are really, really well done. The stunts are great. The car chases are great. It's very humorous. The plot makes absolutely no sense.
All right, John.
First off, first little fun fact. So, that whole sequence of Roman Reigns, or James is his actual name, I'm guessing.
I think it was Jason.
Was it Jason?
No, I'm stupid. It's Joe.
Oh, it's
his
Joe?
His name is Joe.
Joe, a.k.a. Roman Reigns, for those of you who do follow WWE. That whole fight sequence, because they spend an exaggerated amount of time on just Dwayne and him fighting together.
Mm-hmm.
It was an homage to just wrestlers in general.
Yeah.
Because they do like 5 or 10 different wrestling moves.
Oh, yeah.
And they feature like Roman Reigns does this classic special on one of the bodyguards. This little fun factoid for anyone who's wondering, like, why is that scene unnecessarily long? Because they do just kind of abruptly part ways the moment that Hattie gets like taken away. I want to say Heidi, and I'm like, that's not it. Hattie gets taken away, and it's like, oh, a brief parting, then just dip. I'm like, it looks like you guys were going to do that, get her back together, but okay. But I'd say out of Blood Machines, 8.9 Blood Machines, purely because the plot didn't make sense. However, in every other category, I think this movie succeeds. It has rewatchability.
I was waiting for it.
You can watch it with friends and eat popcorn, mm-hmm. drinking games. It has that level of fun. I think even minus the language, I think the family could be a very nice family film above the age of like 13 probably, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this is an okay, you know, like, family... It's about as much of a family movie as probably, like, Get Smart, you know? Because it's not rated R, I don't think.
No, I think it's PG-13.
Yeah, so it doesn't have any, like, really bad language. There's no nudity or, like, sex scenes or anything. It's just got, you know, a lot of, like, balls and dick talk, and that's pretty much, like... But even then, it's not too terrible. Like, I was expecting more. Like, I was expecting, like, every scene to have something about balls, and it's not too bad. It's not overly excessive. As a good movie, this is, like, a 4. But
absolutely.
But as just an entertaining, fun thing to watch, like, an 8.5. Like, it's really, really good. It's so much fun. It's so fun to just, like, talk about it as it's going on, like, with whoever you're watching it with, because the fact is, you're really, it's not one of those movies that if you look away for a second you're gonna miss something. Like, you can catch up pretty quick to what's going on, you know. Great spectacle, fun action that actually looks good for the most part. Great, you know, villain, because Idris Elba kills everything he does. Two likable main actors that you love watching do things.
I mean, the guy wasn't wrong. This is a powerhouse of a cast.
Yeah, this is great. Vanessa Kirby did a really good job, in spite of her terrible makeup. She did a really good job.
You're still peeved about the makeup.
I'm really mad about it. They did her dirty. Like, they could have given her better makeup. Look at Margarita. She was flawless. I was so mad. I'm still mad. justice for Vanessa Kirby. But yeah, she did a really great job. There was the whole, you know, relationship there between the siblings. You know, there was the kind of push and pull of, like, you know, Dwayne Johnson and her. Yeah, I just, overall, I had a ton of fun with it. I out loud laughed several times, which is always something that, that, you know, boosts my review of anything. Yeah, it was just really, really fun. I liked it a lot. And, you know, 10 out of 10, would watch again.
Right.
100%.
I mean, movies, you either... This movie just happens to succeed at being really engaging and just having
fun.
I mean, it has a blockbuster cast.
Yes.
So it helps with that regard, and it gets people wanting to see it. Because, again, as we discussed on the podcast for, like, an hour and a half, like, people will go see movies just to see Dwayne The Rock Johnson at least featured in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, to have that kind of draw factor, and then to be as engaging as that movie is. Granted, plot-wise, narrative-wise, movie's not that great.
But it's so great that they lean into the fact that they know Fast and the Furious is stupid, and they're making fun of all of it. And, like, it's so good that right off the bat they're making fun of themselves, like, immediately. It's so good. It's a parody I would watch again. That's what this movie is. It basically parodies Fast and the Furious.
It does. It really does.
But I love it.
I love the shuttle shout out to the fact that you can't, like, bust through all the walls with a giant truck literally 40 minutes later.
Bust through all the walls with a giant truck.
It's like, okay. Oh, that my works. Gosh.
I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. Do we have any final thoughts?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, go watch it if you haven't. It's worth a watch.
It's so good.
Get drunk and watch it. You can watch it with your friends and talk over it and just tune in when funny stuff happens. Like, it's great. You should definitely watch it. And yeah, even like, you know, family, as long as it's, you know, not like little kids, probably, because they probably wouldn't enjoy it. They wouldn't get a lot of the humor. But if you got like, you know, some teenage kids, you know, around the house,
it'd be a fun teenage movie.
It would be very fun to watch with your, like, you know, teenage kids. But yeah, so remember, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment, or on Twitter at artists_mad. Yeah, so we are still working on Call of Cthulhu. We're, you know, sort of perfecting some of the, you know, sound effects and all of that, trying to make it as polished as possible for you guys. And we are actually looking to release our first kind of actor rollout, hopefully about a week from now, you know, fingers crossed. And we'll be doing, you know, two actors a week for, you know, like 9 weeks after that, because we got a lot of actors in this. And you can visit our website for, you know, more information on that, or just, you know, to learn more about us. That's madartistco.com. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or recommendations that we should review in the future, you can message our social media or email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. And leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps us out, and then we'd love to give you a shout out in return. And thank you guys. We will see you next week. Bye!